UN Security Council voting on an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. They've also, of course, in their resolution, also demanded an unconditional release of all the hostages that were taken by Hamas in October. The US, for the first time, not vetoing a resolution it did not sponsor on this matter. And as we speak to our guest, Zane Dango, the Director General of the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, I want you to listen to really this plea by Riyad Mansour, the Palestinian ambassador to the United Nations, addressing the Security Council on that vote.
Never this openly, from Tantura to Gaza, from 1948 to 2024, we have endured. We have survived. We have resurrected only to face death once again. Life must prevail in Gaza. Freedom must prevail in Palestine. Empathy of outrage and solidarity. They must be freed from fear and want, from siege and occupation, from death and disposition. Families must be reunited and start to heal, at least from the wounds that can actually be healed. They must be given the chance to bury their loved ones, to mourn their loss, to rebuild what can be. Even if the ceasefire happened now and the siege was lifted now, it would take generations to deal with the trauma and the devastation.
My guest this morning is Zane Dango, the DG of the Derco Department. Appreciate your time as always. Just listening to the emotional words there of the ambassador, one almost is tempted to think, isn't it all just a little too late?
Yeah, thank you. Good morning, Bongani. Listening to Riyad Mansour's words does sort of remind us that this kind of resolution should have been done a long time ago. And in fact, dealing with the occupation for the last seven decades is something that the world should have been more urgent about. I think what we call the institutional impunity that Israel has enjoyed has given rise to the atrocities that we have seen. So while we welcome the ceasefire resolution, it is in some ways a little too late for many of the Palestinians.
And in fact, we understand that overnight, since that resolution was adopted, attacks have continued in Gaza. What does it mean?
The important issue is that the resolution is passed by the Security Council, which means it's binding. We were a little alarmed when immediately after the vote, the ambassador of the U.S. in a statement, the U.S. abstained, stated that the resolution is non-binding. For us, this is either hopefully just an error on her side. And not
Zane, I'm just going to ask you to repeat that. The line cut for a little bit. I want to make sure I understood everything you said. Please, let's just try again. You were alarmed when the U.S. ambassador said?
That the resolution was non-binding. So we're hoping that that's just an error on her side and not an indication that the U.S. may not seek to abide by the resolution. Article 25 of the Charter makes Security Council resolutions binding on all member states. So while we think that Israel may continue to disregard the U.N. Security Council resolutions, as they have done for many, many years before, that on this occasion, that there will be countermeasures put in place if they do not abide. And that includes, arms embargoes and other forms of sanctions and the normal kinds of countermeasures that are put in place when states do not abide by Security Council resolutions.
It would be binding, of course, also on Hamas, because this resolution also calls for the unconditional release of all the remaining hostages. If neither side abides by what you are saying is binding, what can the UN do?
So it's important that you point that out, because the resolution calls for a demand. The key word, the demand, both in terms of the ceasefire and both in terms of the hostages and also the detainees and prisoners, which is reference to the prisoners being held by Israel too. Countermeasures can be put in place by the Security Council on individual states and non-state actors who do not comply with the Security Council resolution. So if Hamas doesn't comply, the kind of sanctions that many of them are already facing can be increased. I mean, whether it's individual sanctions, criminal sanctions. We hope that they do abide. We hope that Israel abides, but we also hope that the Security Council takes its responsibility seriously when assessing that people are not institutions, whether it's states or non-state actors, are not respecting the resolution and takes the appropriate countermeasures. And in the case of the state of Israel, it would be sanctions. In the case of Hamas, it would be sanctions on individuals and the organization, and also criminal sanctions.
We also note, of course, that in the aftermath, the Israeli Prime Minister promptly cancelled a high-level delegation that was planned to visit Washington from Israel. Is this an indication, do you think, of a cooling of relations between certainly Netanyahu and the Biden administration?
We've seen a change in tone from the U.S. administration of the last 3 weeks in relation to Prime Minister Netanyahu and the Israeli government. And I think this also just signals a further cooling off in the relations. You know, the U.S. did seek to weaken the resolution. The E10, which sponsored the resolution, the E10 stands for the elected 10 members, did, for example, take out the word permanent ceasefire, replace it with lasting. So concessions were made to ensure that the U.S. does not veto. But the fact that the U.S. did not veto is an indication that they are giving a huge message to the Israelis that they are not happy with what they are doing in Gaza. And the U.S. is concerned that the continuing atrocities may also impact on them going forward, also in the context of other cases. For example, the ICJ merit case on genocide could also then impact on those who support the Israeli government through materially or morally.
Is it your sense that for all the conflicts that have happened in that part of the world over the last 70 years, this is one where perhaps there'll be a point of no return? 32,000 Palestinians killed so far. And of course, that number could rise exponentially if you think about starvation, hunger and disease and all of the consequences of the destruction. Are we at that point of no return?
Well, we hope that we're at the point where the atrocities end and that there's a lasting solution to this. You know, we've had a belligerent occupation since 1967, and belligerent occupation is not just a legal term, it also means it's accompanied by violence. And that kind of belligerence hopefully will now come to an end, and that we will have the space for meaningful negotiations, actual meaningful negotiations, not the kind of almost mock negotiations and the erstwhile peace process that will actually arrive at a lasting solution for both Israelis and Palestinians.
I wonder if there is a lasting solution. I mean, if you talk about two states, what do the Palestinians inherit at the end of all of this, given what you're seeing in Gaza now?
Yeah, I think the idea of a two-state solution has been imperiled by the actions of this Israeli government and previous Israeli governments through the illegal settlements. But you also see the wanton destruction of all the means to sustain a livelihood. I think there's a new international crime on the books emerging out of this called domicide, which is the destruction of homes and livelihoods. The rebuilding of Gaza is going to take such a long time. The destruction of the West Bank is going to take such a long time. I think that all of us will have to come together and decide, and led by the Palestinians and Israelis themselves, but also the Palestinian voices must be heard, is what is a lasting solution. We've seen in the last weeks, we've had people like Mustafa Barghouti in South Africa, where he is talking about the South African approach, where you've got a one-state solution which calls for it's secular human rights for all. I think we still, abide by the Oslo agreements and international law around a two-state solution. But as you correctly pointed out, this may have been permanently imperiled by the actions of the Israeli government, particularly in this last, violence of the occupation. Yeah.
Oslo 1993, that seems so long ago. Zain Dango, appreciate your time. Director General at Durka.